Lots of channels, nothing to watch, especially if you're searching for the truth. It's time to interrupt your regularly scheduled programs with something actually worth watching. Salem News Channel. Straightforward, unfiltered, with in-depth insight and analysis from the greatest collection of conservative minds, like Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Sebastian Gorka, and more. Find truth. Watch 24/7 on SNC.TV and on Local Now, Channel 525.
Hey, everybody. It's in the Charlie Kirk Show. Candace Owens joins the program. She's been making news lately. She clarifies the record here. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com and AmFest at amfest.com. That's amfest.com. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is the great Candace Owens. Candace is 40 weeks pregnant, everybody, so she might have to leave
yes,
at any moment's notice. Thank you for taking the time.
Candace,
you had a viral interview with Tucker yesterday, but right as the interview was posted, Ben Shapiro tweeted at a Bible verse that you tweeted, which I found to be totally out of line, and kind of triggered this massive internet dispute, and he effectively asked you to resign from the Daily Wire. Candace, what is going on here?
Well, first, I just want to say that I think people thought it was like all of this was like suspicious timing and that there's no conspiracy theory here. First and foremost, I had signed on to do Tucker weeks ago. So this interview was already planned. And then obviously the night before, the video of Ben saying some remarks about me went viral. And then minutes before my Tucker interview aired, he did tweet that. And I haven't yet gotten any clarity on what the significance of that tweet was. You know, me posting the Bible passages was just basically me calling for peace and accepting, you know, the things that you can't change. And I've definitely have had a very peaceful, happy end of pregnancy. And so I didn't and still don't really understand the nature of the tweet, but I did feel compelled in this instance to answer more strongly because it was a biblical passage. And I have said for a very long time that it does feel like Christians are always being told to shut up. And when you share just a biblical passage and it's somehow being construed or being told that there's something wrong with this passage, it was important for me as a Christian to defend our faith.
Yeah. Totally. So this has kind of been simmering for a couple of weeks. So just by background, Ben at a private event spoke to a group of people, and I want to make sure I'm very clear and specific. He said something on the lines of, "You have faux sophistication on the matter, Candace." That was his quote. What is he talking about here? I mean, I follow you on social media. I'm a very pro-Israel person, right? I get accused of being a Jewish shill on a daily basis. Like, what is Ben talking about here? And then secondly, why of all the tweets that he decided to ask you to resign, did he choose a Bible verse?
Charlie, your questions are the same questions that I have. But what I have said on Tucker and what I will say here is that I think a lot of people who are emotionally involved in the conflict overseas are perceiving people that are actually moderate as radical. And they're not able to see that maintaining a level head is okay. And I think that when they have the benefit of hindsight and it's 2020, they're going to maybe regret some of the things that they've said, especially amongst their most fervent, to their most fervent allies and supporters, which is why on Tucker, I even brought up the concept of the attacks that have been constant against you. And if it's sort of like, if you don't veer into radicalism right now, then they take everything. There's an extreme sensitivity there, you know, and every comment that you make, and I can correlate this to weeks ago when I was quite literally, I sent two tweets back to back about Brian Mast and his comments in Congress being wrong as somebody that is a sitting congressman about saying there's no such thing as innocent civilian life. And then I followed it up by saying, you know, any sort of genocidal language is wrong no matter what government's coming from. I was referring to the American government, and the backlash that I got for saying genocide is always wrong, it's bonkers. I still can't comprehend it. It's such an easy statement for everyone to agree with. Every single person should say, amen, amen, yes, agree. Genocide is always wrong and unjustifiable. And yet people read in between the lines and said that this must be, you're saying this is happening. And it's like, no, but people, that is literally you applying your emotion, and it's utterly illogical. And I think we are living in times right now where it's really scary to see how much emotion people are having that basic statements. And if I tweeted right now, pedophilia, no matter where it happens in the world, is always wrong. Is that a statement at certain times okay? Is that statement at certain times not? So I have been trying to understand really what's going on. And the only thing that I can come up with is that people are highly emotional and they're not thinking straight right
now. Yeah, that's an eternal statement, right? It's true regardless of what's happening. I want to just reinforce this because you bring up a really important point. And for the record, I've always gotten along well with Ben. I've known Jeremy for a long time. But I call balls and strikes where I see it. And Candace, I think it's been super unfair the way some people have been treating you, and really unfair. Because look, I know your heart too. I tweeted this yesterday. Candace Owens flew 18 hours through a brutal European connection to go to the embassy opening in Jerusalem. And we toured Israel together. And you and I were on campuses multiple times together defending Israel and defending the Jewish people. And so I just find a lot of the coverage to be, you know, not a lot, but some people's chattering has been highly emotional. And so let's just, you talked about this in the Tucker interview, Candace. If somebody in the audience is a very pro-Israel person, can you bring them up to speed as how their cause is actually weakening by how they are going after allies? And I'm afraid that they are diluting and cheapening the term anti-Semitism the same way they've done with racism.
There's no question that they've diluted it. People are not even blinking now to be called an anti-Semite because, you know, when you start with Richard Spencer and you end with Charlie Kirk and you say everybody's an anti-Semite and everybody's trafficking in anti-Semitic tropes, you've just lost the plot. I mean, they've seen everybody from Joe Rogan to Tucker Carlson last night for God knows what reason being called an anti-Semite. And it's just completely a losing argument. And so it's funny because I've had some, you know, pro-Israel friends so that reached out to me and were saying, well, we're just trying to help you. And this time I asserted myself and I said, no, you need to listen to me. It's obvious to everybody that's looking around right now that there has been a loss in support for Israel. And that's not because any person agrees with what happened on October 7th. We have all said on our platforms multiple times that what happened on October 7th is completely abhorrent, but it has a lot to do with the reaction of going after allies, for asking questions, for trying to remain not neutral, but humane throughout this and saying that it is always sad. Like, people were upset when I said it's always sad when you see a dead child. And some of the upset said, well, you can't say that unless you say that also they were just being used as human shields. It's no, you can feel sympathy. You can feel empathy for individuals always, no matter what is going on. You don't need to gauge or jump into a political debate to acknowledge that you're still a human and you have a human response to seeing a dead child. And so what I have said from the very, actually before any of this on my show, is that when you use terms too much and you refer to everybody as something, whether it is a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, you will then find that those words have no power. And I do think that part of the frustration that some people that are pro-Israel are having is trying to understand why this word has no power anymore. And I can explain it over and over, but I can't help people understand it. Is you saw it happen with Black Lives Matter. First, people were so scared of being called a racist. It was such a horrible smear, horrible libel. Like, what do I do to not be called that? And then as they started calling everything racist, and you started realizing air was racist, and the CNN articles were saying, you know, white people blinking was racist. It became, okay, now we know that this word actually doesn't mean what you're saying. It just means that you want me to submit to whatever it is that you're saying very easily because you've used a smear. You've called me a Holocaust denier. You've called me an anti-Semite. You've said my silence is violence. And actually what you're trying to do is you're trying to assert control over me while claiming that you are the victim in this, but actually you're trying to assert power over me. And that's not the way to do it. You have to be well-intended. And Dennis Prager has always made that point, by the way, for years and years, that you have to be very careful when you use a word like that, because it will lose its power very fast. And unfortunately, his warnings were not heeded in this circumstance, and people are just don't believe it when people are being called anti-Semitic anymore.
Dennis warned us about this. He said an attack used too much loses its power. And you and I both were kind of, we both still consider Dennis a great friend and a great teacher. And Dennis says he's very careful using that label, he said, because we want it when we need it, when there's a legit anti-Semite. And throwing it around as a thought-terminating cliche or a means of control or hyper-emotional does no one a good service. So Candace, let me ask you, because not everyone listens to your show, which is excellent. Everyone should subscribe to her show. There's a lot of, not a lot, there's a fair amount of rumor or mystery of what you stand on the war. Can you just, the floor is yours. What is your position? Because I think people are completely misinterpreting your views of the Jewish people, of what's happening in Israel. Just explain to our audience, just to kind of cut off the rumors at the pass.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. And that's what I've said, is nobody even asks anymore. And then when you give them an answer and you say, I've said this on my show multiple times, then they say to you, well, I don't listen to your show, and you know, you should tweet it. I'm like, well, the full show is posted on Twitter every single day. Oh, well, I don't follow this account. So it becomes not about whether or not what you said or what you didn't say. It becomes about whether or not they were on Twitter at the moment and saw what you said. Otherwise, it doesn't count. You know, and so that's been very interesting. And again, a way to assert power and control, and to say that you need to say it when I am online, and on whether it's Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. If I didn't see it, it didn't actually happen, which is completely foolish. But I have not shifted my views at all, when it comes to Israel and Palestine, whether it is Ukraine or Russia, whether it is Afghanistan. America has issues at home. We do not need to be sending more money overseas. It is the perspective that is held by Thomas Massey, who is now being harassed at being called an anti-Semite for his consistent voting against sending any dollar overseas throughout his entire career, right? He has not changed. He has not switched up. So this is not something that is being guided by a hatred or a love of people based on their race at all. It is just my policy, my stance is that America is falling apart. The politicians that are opining on stage and saying, well, we can do both. Look around you. Obviously, we can't. America is in steep decline educationally, socially, and morally. And I have also been clear that I understand the sentiments coming from white Americans that are saying, why are we suddenly being told now to care about the university debacle? We have been calling this out for years, and Charlie, you're the perfect person to speak about this. You and I have traversed universities. We have been drowned out. We have been harassed. We have been chased out of restaurants for our ideas as conservatives, and nobody cared. We couldn't get people to stop funding these universities. We could not get people to understand how bad the problem had become when you actually had professors, forget the students that were protesting. You had professors that were tweeting, all I want for Christmas is a white genocide. I believe that was at Drexel University in Pennsylvania, and that faculty member was protected, calling openly for a genocide of white people. So it is a fair question. It is a fair critique when people say, why are you telling us this is a problem now? And this has been a problem that many of us have been fighting for the last decade, and it seemed like nobody cared. And so by being fair in that assessment, by recognizing what white people have gone through in this country, by recognizing this, what I consider myself to be America first stances of the problems that are happening in this country, and by saying that I do not want to be involved in another Middle Eastern conflict, no matter where the stage is, people hear that in this moment as some form of anti-Semitism. It's not. It's consistency. It is the reason that I quoted Thomas Sowell on last night's episode, that he has a quote about, you know, the civil rights era. He's referring to Black America in this quote, but saying when people are used to special treatment, sometimes being treated the same can feel like discrimination, and it's not discrimination to say the obvious truths that we are facing in this nation. You can debate that academically, but don't be disingenuous and call people anti-Semites for holding the same positions that they have always held for the last decade.
Yeah, your position has large agreement in many political circles. By the way, it's also held by people from Thomas Massey to Dennis Kucinich to Rand Paul to a certain extent. And you can have disagreements without having to throw around some of those vile labels. America's colleges and universities today are less concerned with critical thinking than with indoctrination. It is no wonder why so many young Americans embrace cancel culture, deny free speech to conservatives, and even celebrate terrorism. But I'm happy to report there is one college where students debate ideas openly and honestly, where they pursue truth together with their professors, and where America's great heritage of liberty is studied and revered. My favorite college, Hillsdale College. As stated in Hillsdale's founding document in 1844, Hillsdale's original mission was to offer the kind of serious liberal arts education needed to preserve the blessings of civil and religious liberty across the land, and this mission continues to guide Hillsdale College today. You can learn more at my favorite college's website, charlieforhillsdale.com. There you will find a short video. It's just over a minute long, showing how Hillsdale's work, not only on its Michigan campus, not only in Washington, D.C. campus, but across the nation, is effective in defending American liberty. Take some time to watch today at charlieforhillsdale.com. That is charlieforhillsdale.com. Candace, I'm curious, has Ben Shapiro called you privately to try to fix this, or has this all just been a public dispute?
It's all been public. I've been, you know, very surprised by it. It's, like I said on Tucker last night, something that I think is unfairly a blemish to the Daily Wire, because, you know, the four of us other hosts that work here at the Nashville campus are, we get along very well, you know, and I think that this looks like something that it's not, because Ben is not a part of the day-to-day operations. And I'm not sure why his instinct is to always air something publicly. You know, Charlie, you and I worked for years together. We have had so many disagreements. I would call you, text you directly, yell at you. You know, that's healthy, you know. But I would never just throw out a random tweet and expect you to see it when we were having any of those disagreements. When people text me and say, I disagree with Charlie on this, I will just text you, like, now, up until this day. You know, what did you mean by this? Why are you doing this? We have to be able to have healthy dialogue and healthy instinct, even when we are not understanding each other. It doesn't make it better to let things become public fodder. And it's why I did not want to meet Ben where he was at, in engaging anything that was disparaging about him, because I'm 34 years old. I have my third kid on the way. I know how to communicate like an adult. And so, yeah, I don't still yet fully understand where he is coming from. And I do think that we have all tried to be exceedingly understanding of his emotions during this time as somebody who has, you know, familial ties to Israel. And, you know, I understanding that over the last 5 weeks, it's been a very emotional time for him. And that's, you know, the human angle that I have tried to take in trying to perhaps understand why he is airing some of this publicly.
Yeah, look, I said I've known Ben for a long time. I hope he fixes that, because leadership should warrant the tough conversation and to do it in private. By the way, it's not good for the movement. It's not good for the Daily Wire. We need the Daily Wire. We need the Daily Wire strong. It's an important company, does amazing things. Walsh, Knowles, Jordan, yourself, all that good stuff. So Candace, just a couple minutes remaining here. This Israel issue, I'm afraid, is breaking both the left and the right simultaneously in different ways. What can we do to make sure that doesn't happen? On the right, the left, they can go to hell on the right.
Well, we need to act like conservatives. We need to practice what we preach. We talk about free speech. We can't suddenly buck the trend of free speech because we're angry or we're upset. We talk about the need for more dialogue. We talk about the need for less libels. We talk about the need for less smears in the media. We cannot engage in that. We can't engage in the behavior of leftists just because we have become upset or an issue is close to us. Consistency is what is called upon. We must remain ideologically consistent. I think it's important to call balls and strikes within our own movement. But I think that that's part of the problem, is that many people are not, as I said to Carlson, behaving with consistently conservative principles on these matters. And I'm seeing a lot of behavior that mimics BLM right now. And that is going to, without question, cause a fracturing in the movement by people that are well-intended. And look, I think that we were already sensing this sort of civil war in the conservative movement. And I think that's best represented by the very different perspectives that even the candidates that are running have. Are we America first? Do we believe that we should be engaging in overseas conflict all the time, nonstop? We are, I think, as Vivek Ramaswamy said, going through this sort of adolescence period of trying to define what the conservative party is. And I think it's changing. I think Trump was a huge part of that sea change, obviously, and realizing that there's a frustration. I think younger conservatives feel a little disconnected and detached from some of the older conservatives in the movement for certain reasons that have those that have become accustomed to military industrial complex instincts and constantly saying that our allegiance should somehow be overseas, and they become accustomed to constantly being involved in overseas complex. And I think that we want something different. And the first thing that we want that is something different is healthy debate and demanding healthy debate, demanding full-throated discussions and not emotional responses, no matter what happens, whether Russia invades Ukraine. We deserve a full-throated debate about whether or not we should be sending billions of dollars unaccounted for over to Zelensky, whether or not it's COVID policy. No matter how fearful people are, we deserve to have a full-throated debate about how we live in a COVID era. Do we still have our freedoms, or do we become people that are suddenly authoritarian because we have fears? That is the future of the Republican Party that I want to see, are people that can look back and say, whether you agreed with me or did not agree with me, I remained consistent, and I hope that you respect that.
I'll give some advice. Candace Owens is undefeated, everybody. So be careful fighting Candace Owens. Doesn't end well for you. Candace, God bless. We have your back, and have that baby. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Charlie. Such a pleasure to always join.
Thank you. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Chances are you've been out here before. The chaos in the markets, oil and stocks, just when you thought it was safe and interest rates were rising, new threats come out of nowhere. Tensions are boiling from Asia to Europe. Adapting is key to safeguarding your wealth. You may not have considered gold before. It's not speculation, but insurance. And right now you need some insurance. Noble Gold Investments have been protecting investors for disaster for years with precious metals. So if you're worried, it might be safe to take a fresh look at gold and silver. Gold is a proven safe shield for your portfolio and volatility balance against uncertainty. I buy all of my gold from Noble Gold Investments. They're offering a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with its new silver IRA. Crisis brews, portfolios waver, but gold insulates. Secure yourself against the threats. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Secure yourself against the threats. NobleGoldInvestments.com, NobleGoldInvestments.com. Joining us now is one of my favorite guests, Heather McDonald. Heather, welcome back to the program. I want everyone to check out When Race Trumps Merit. So Heather, there's been several stories, Haley Biden carjacked in D.C., 8 teenagers charged with murder in Las Vegas of a young white man. San Francisco, that's cleaning up all the streets for Xi, which is a separate issue in some way. But we see all these different stories, and we're getting more and more emails. Do you think that white America is starting to wake up, that there is a multidimensional, multi-institutional war against white people in this country?
Well, we haven't figured out a language yet to really talk about it, Charlie, that will be acceptable to even many conservative ears. But I certainly hear that from students. I was at the University of Virginia last week, and a young student that I was speaking with said that there is a growing awareness among young people, especially for white males, that they are absolutely pariahs in our society. They are going to be the last admitted to schools, the last hired, the first fired. And so it is a reality, and it is a reality that is absolutely denied by the entirety of our mainstream society and by many conservatives. But we need to keep pointing this out, because there is no grounds whatsoever for the inheritors of European civilization to cancel it. Now, those inheritors may be people of all different colors, but the people that are under attack are the Caucasian inheritors of that civilization. And at this point in world history, we have nothing to apologize for, because any violations of human rights, and human rights is, of course, exclusively a European Western concept, violations of those rights, whether it's American slavery or imperial atrocities, pale in comparison to every other civilization's ongoing atrocities and violence.
So, Heather, I mean, another example, Louisiana Tech, a black student stabbing 4 white women is just another story that has happened. I do think that there is a greater and greater understanding and agreement that there the laws, the enforcement of the laws, the lack of media coverage, it's almost fashionable to hate white people. Now, I guess the next question is, Heather, what next? Would it be helpful for, you know, white people or white America to recognize and realize this and talk about this more? Because anytime we notice it, it's the amazing phrase from Michael Anton, it's not happening, but it's good that it is. Like, we're not allowed to even notice it. Your thoughts, Heather McDonald?
It's not just fashionable to hate white people, it's presidential. You know, we have a president now who goes around at every opportunity staying the preposterous lie that white supremacy is the biggest threat in this country. And let's just get the facts out there, Charlie, yet again, because this is so completely denied by the media that amplifies the Biden message of white supremacy. If you look at all interracial violence between blacks and whites and whites and blacks, blacks commit 87% of all interracial attacks between blacks and whites and whites and blacks. A black is 35 times more likely to commit an act of violence against a white person than vice versa. And we see it, you know, the few times when you get the videos and you get either the names that reveal that it's a black perpetrator because of the pseudo-Africanist names, we see this happening, and yet we're in an absolute state of denial. So what it's going to take, what sort of politician or leader to articulate that reality, it remains a very, very touchy thing. I mean, I can feel it when I go on, you know, what is for us the mainstream media, which is Fox News. If you use white in any other context than one of opprobrium, you really are asking to be called a racist by fellow conservatives. And that is preposterous, because to say that whites are under attack is not to attack blacks per se. It is to notice the facts, the averages. Of course, there are millions of blacks who are law abiding, who don't want to be treated as perpetual victims and wards of the state. But on average, there is a pathological inner city culture that is creating dysfunction, and you have now what's going on, a race hustle on the part of too many black leaders, where they can simply play upon white guilt and claim that it is a accomplishment in itself to be black. You know, you have the possibility now of specializing in being black, just as I could specialize in being female, or gays can specialize in being gay. And that's the one accomplishment that nobody can compete with you on. And it gives you enormous power over the absolute pariahs of straight white males.
And yet we're told that racism is the biggest problem. What could actually break the matrix, and I don't know if you agree, Heather, I think that it's probably 50-50. I don't think every black believes that racism is the biggest problem. I think some have convinced themselves of that, but I think deep down, a lot of great black Americans, they know that there are other problems. Like you said, the pathologies that are put into their culture, right? What is considered to be acceptable? Not staying with the women that you impregnate, so on and so forth. Instead of telling black Americans that they could be great by doing great and noble things, we have this self-esteem cult of like black girl magic. You're magical because of whatever. It's toxic. And of course, there are tons of problems in urban America, and it continues to this day. Let's just play this tape that just went viral here. Play 71. But of course, racism is the problem. Play cut 71.
On my butter.
We do it. Don't play my slime. I'm first grade and we'll guess like that. No, switchy. No talking.
No cap.
No talking.
Good game.
Three switches right here.
And I put the bitches
that's just enough right there. That's enough. One, two, three. That's enough.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if you saw that video, Heather. It's such a mystery why there are so many murders in the inner city. So, Heather, just go through the numbers, because I think what percentage of murders are committed by black men in the country? You know, violent crime, is it proportional to their population?
Oh, no, it's vastly disproportional. Blacks commit about 66% of all violent crime in the country, at least in the 75 largest counties, which is where most of the population resides, though they're 15% of the population in those 75 largest counties. They commit well over half of all murders. It's so disproportionate. It's far more disproportionate than their numbers in the prison population, where they're a third of the prison population. In fact, studies have shown that Blacks are less likely to be convicted of felonies, whether because prosecutors just aren't coming down as hard or they've got sympathetic juries. But at a third of the prison population, that's actually much less than you would expect from Blacks' involvement in violent crime. But that video is absolutely classic, Charlie. We've seen those videos. The police see those videos all the time. You know, we're supposed to believe that the problem with these Black kids is that they're too poor. They don't have any opportunities, as the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, has said to justify the flash mobs marauding magnificent while beating up on white tourists. The fact of the matter is Blacks are posting, inner city kids post videos like that from their smartphones all the time, showing off their money. The social media is the police's best friend because it helps them solve these gang ties. Any kid that has a smartphone is not economically deprived. That kid is richer in resources than Louis XIV ever was.
That is such a good point. That is so correct. Yes. That's a great
point. We turn our eyes to this. We can't look at it any longer. In the 90s, we were talking about rap music. We were talking about the cop hatred, the misogyny, the homophobia. We were disturbed by it. Now we don't even talk about it. We simply blame ourselves and feel like it is somehow a violation of racial etiquette to mention these pathologies. And there's pathologies in the white underclass as well. Let's be perfectly clear.
Of course. And by the way, let's just summarize it. This is so simple. Get married, get a job, graduate high school, don't commit crimes, period. I want to play this piece of tape. There's several pieces of tape. Let's play cut 118. This has gone viral, millions of views, of a kid's birthday party, and the kids are celebrating with firearms. I wonder if they're loaded. The parents are on board with this. It is a Black culture problem, everybody. You know who the first person to say that is? Brandon Tatum, Candace Owens. It's not racism. It's not white supremacy. I'm sorry. This is a major problem. This is a kid's birthday party of 6 and 7 year olds dancing around with handguns. Play cut 118, please. Yeah, but racism is the problem, right? White supremacy is the greatest threat to the American homeland. And you know what's really sick, and I don't delight in this, is that some of those kids are probably going to get killed in a crossfire. First of all, just that's again, just like rule number one, that's against like every rule of how you handle a firearm, okay? So that alone should just bother you, okay? Secondly, you're letting 8-year-olds dance around with guns? Spare me the lecture that it's white people's fault. You were finishing. I don't know if you remember the thought that you were on, but it was important. Do you want to just summarize what you were talking about? We can go from there.
Well, yes, there's nothing that white people can do at this point. I get asked all the time, do you want to use? Well, what can we do to close the academic skills gap? And I say, the we that you're referring to cannot do anything more.
The we you're referring to have done far enough. I want to play this piece of tape. I don't know if we have my answer to it, but this is important. Some of the biggest pushers of white supremacy being the problem are white people. It is self-loathing. By far the most pushers are white people. I would say there's plenty. I mean, Al Sharpton and all of them are there, but okay, well, that's fine. Play cut 119.
You made a claim that the family is the bedrock of a civilized society or a productive society. How do you define a family? Because in the 250,000 years that humans have existed on this planet, the nuclear family, where you had a single breadwinner, 2.6 children, and a white picket fence, is barely 100 years old. It's a post-war phenomena based on the wealth after World War II. So would you consider a family, a same-sex couple, for example, a legitimate family that provides this bedrock for society? And also, you know, we can also remember that interracial families were once illegal as well, you know, so the idea of a family has changed in human history. It used to be extended. Anyway,
that's not the tape I wanted, but the dialogue goes on for him mentioning that blacks are treated terribly later in the discussion in the criminal justice system. And my answer is, well, stop committing crimes. I think a lot of people are waking up because the culture, not us, the culture way overplayed their hand when it came to racism being the problem, white supremacy. And I think when you start to see videos like that kid's birthday party and the graduation of blacks waving around guns, like, yeah, no, time out. Enough blame whitey. In fact, we have one of our most viral clips at NAU where a black student says, well, isn't it white people's fault? Like, why is it white people's fault that black men don't stay with the women that they impregnate? How is that my fault or the white race's fault? How is that white supremacy's fault? The answer, and by the way, just so we're clear, 70%+, so-ish, depends on what city, but it's right around 70-75%. So about 1 in 4-ish, but we'll round down, 70%. Of black men abandon the women they impregnate. White people are not to blame for that. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. And God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company. Like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.